Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, with you for an hour of science fiction. Later on, we hear a story from Ray Bradbury on the Radio City Playhouse, but right now it's Isaac Asimov's Liar on Exploring Tomorrow. This short story, first published in 1941, marks a first for Asimov and the English language, as it proved to be the first time the word robotics was used. And at that point in history, the word robot was only 21 years old. Enjoy the story next from February 26th, 1958, from the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Now, step into the incredible, amazing future as we go exploring tomorrow. Guide to these adventures of the mind, the editor of Astounding Science Fiction magazine, John Campbell, Jr.
Tonight's story is about a liar. Ever stop to figure out just what you mean by a liar? A liar is somebody who doesn't tell the truth. Somebody who injures people by not giving the true facts. But suppose you had someone who injured people by telling the truth. Would he be a liar? Wonder just what a liar is.
Exploring Tomorrow is presented by the Mutual Broadcasting System in cooperation with X-Lax, America's largest selling laxative, and The Reader's Digest, the most widely read magazine in the world. In a moment, John Campbell returns with the story of The Liar.
Question of a robot. The idea of a robot. Now, that certainly seems like pure science fiction stuff. As a matter of fact, it isn't. You know, you have several robots around your own home. In my own home, for instance, I have an automatic oil burner robot. It has one finger stuck up in the living room to see how warm it is there. It has another little finger put up in the stack to see whether the fire is burning properly. And if any one of these little sensory devices reports that things aren't what they should be, the robot could protect the house itself and the inhabitants of the house, shuts off the furnace. Dr. Isaac Asimov, the author of tonight's story, recognized this in setting up his proposition of the three laws of robotics. The first law, a robot shall never harm or allow harm to come to a human being. The second, that it should obey the orders of a human being. And the third, that it should protect itself. Because after all, a robot is an expensive piece of machinery. Well, now let's consider the more advanced kind of robot we do this section. Say they're in production.
Come in. Oh, Dr. Calvin, what's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to be sure there was a meeting this afternoon, Dr. Lanning, that's all.
Today is Friday.
It was this morning.
Well, then we have no problem. It being Friday, the executive officers of the firm of U.S. Robot and Mechanical Men will assemble in the conference room at the customary hour of 3:30.
Well, I was just asking.
What do you think of our latest model?
He looks the same as the rest, just about as animated. What are you going to call him?
Herbie. I think Herbie fits him, don't you?
Herbie, Chester, Sam. What's the difference?
Dr. Calvin. This fellow couldn't be called anything but Herbie.
Oh. Well, I'll see you at 3:30.
What do you think of her, Herbie?
Oh, she's all right.
She's an old frump, and you know it.
I wouldn't say that. Besides, that's not what you're thinking. You're thinking the old girl isn't such a bad sort. And you don't know what this firm would do without her.
What? What was that? How do you know what I was thinking? Dr. Calvin, Dr. Bogart, I have purposely confined today's meeting to we three. We're in trouble. Serious trouble.
What kind of trouble, Dr. Lanning?
Our latest model, RV-34, can read minds.
Is it impossible?
Dr. Bogart, I think we may assume Dr. Lanning knows what he's talking about.
Take it for granted, I do. In short, we have a mind-reading robot on our hands, and we've got to find out why it reads minds.
There could not have been a hitch in the assembly line. I guarantee that.
You guarantee? Mm-hmm. Dr. Bogart, can you answer for the entire assembly? By exact count, there are 75,000 operations necessary for the manufacture of a single positronic brain, each separate operation depending upon any number of factors, from 5 to 105. If any one of these factors goes wrong, your robot's brain is ruined. I quote your own information folder, Dr. Bogart.
It is not my fault if anything went wrong. I am a mathematician, not an assembly supervisor.
And how can you guarantee anything?
I don't think we're going to get anywhere trying to fix the blame on someone. We've got to find out what went wrong. I want to understand you, Herbie. I want to get to know you. I brought you some books which you might like to read. By reading them, I...
I can see at once these books won't interest me. Textbooks, aren't they?
Well, yes, but I...
You see, I find nothing to them. Your science is just a mass of collected data plastered together by so many makeshift theories. And so incredibly simple that they're not worth bothering about.
Go on.
Your fiction that's so interesting. Your studies of emotions and human motives.
Human emotions interest you?
Isn't that really why you came to see me?
What?
I wish I could help you.
You know?
I know what you're thinking about. You think about it all the time.
Well, if you know so much, then you could help me.
Yes. He loves you.
You're mistaken. He must be. He doesn't see me as a woman.
But he does. A thing like that cannot be hidden from me.
Oh, but I'm not attractive enough.
I'm just a machine. I can't judge physical attraction in human beings, but I know there are many kinds of attraction. And I know Dr. Lanning loves you.
Oh, I never thought it possible. I never dared to hope. Oh, Herbie. Herbie.
Accident that he doesn't know how to do. Now, this is something that scientists sometimes overlook. Herbie apparently represents one of those cases where something has been done by somebody who doesn't know how to do it and wishes desperately that he didn't know how to do it. They've got a telepathic robot. It looks like it would be worth millions, but how did they get it?
Oh, Dr. Bogart, sit down.
Thank you.
Well, at least if you know a good joke, spread it around.
Well, I just saw Dr. Kelvin.
Oh.
I never saw so much lipstick and ball paint on any living woman before. She must be in love.
Well, I didn't ask you here to talk about Dr. Kelvin. Have you made any progress?
There is nothing wrong with the mathematics. The change is due to something along the assembly line.
The cause must be found. It's worth millions if we can do it when we want to, instead of by accident. And it's your job to find out.
But
why not ask Herbie? He should know what went wrong.
Trust you to think of that. Herbie, listen to me, eh? Tell me if I made any mistakes in my calculations when they built you.
You made no mistake. Or if you had, how could I tell you? After all, you're a much better mathematician than me. Besides, this is not what is really on your mind. You are thinking about your superior, Dr. Lanning. fancy you're thinking what a good thing it would be if he were to resign.
Oh, yes, now I can see how the idea pleases you.
And I can tell you something else. Dr. Lanning has already resigned. But the resignation will not take effect until the problem of myself has been resolved. And then he will turn over his job to his successor. Oh, yes, Dr. Bogart, you will be his successor. You will be the new director.
Happy, you are a wonderful fellow, you know that? You are simply magnificent. You are not the product of a mistake. You are the product of genius. Oh, you are a wonderful, wonderful fellow. Dr. Kelvin, you are as colorful as the flowers, Lady. May I compliment you?
Have you seen today's newspaper?
No, I really haven't had the time.
He's going to be married to a girl half his age.
Who?
Dr. Lanning.
Getting married. Ah, so that's it. That explains something. He's making new plans for the future. Yes, we must congratulate him.
Yes, we must. Oh, yes, we really must. It's not true, is it, Herbie? It's not true.
No, it's not true. This is just an illusion. You'll wake up soon.
Yes, it isn't true, is it? He's not going to get married, except to me. Oh, Herbie, I've loved him all these years, and now I know he loves me. He couldn't, he wouldn't marry anyone else.
No, he loves you, only you.
I know.
He is only waiting for the right time to tell you.
Yes, I know. Stop it, what are you trying to do? What are you trying to do, make a fool of me?
I was trying to help you.
Help me? By telling me this is all a dream. This is no dream. I wish it were. I wish it were. Why did you tell me you loved me? Why? Why?
I had to.
Oh, you're here, Dr. Calvin. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I want to have a talk with this mechanical monstrosity. Harvey, I'm talking about you, so listen to me.
Yes, sir.
Have you discussed me with Dr. Bogart? Well, answer me.
No, sir.
You haven't, eh? That's what I thought. You said nothing to him about my resigning?
No, sir.
Then he was lying.
Yes, sir.
Well, it looks as though I'm going to have a serious talk with Dr. Bogart. Really, Dr. Calvin, you find this amusing?
Not very amusing, Dr. Lanning. Not so very amusing. Only I don't believe a word he's just said.
What?
I believe he did tell Dr. Bogart you were going to resign.
You believe he... Harvey, is it true? Did you tell Dr. Bogart? Answer me. Can't you speak?
I can speak.
Then answer me. I want the truth.
Oh, this is very funny. Three of us, the greatest robot experts in the world, falling into the trap. The same trap. He makes fools of us. He doesn't even know enough to laugh at us.
Achieved by accident something they didn't know how to do. The robot was in the peculiar position of having knowledge but no wisdom.
Well, Dr. Calvin?
Dr. Lanning, have you forgotten the fundamental law we impress upon the positronic brain of all robots?
Of course not.
On no condition is a human being to be injured in any way.
Even when such injury is directed by another human being.
But what kind of injury do we mean?
Any kind.
Any kind, yes. That would take in mental hurt, the deflation of ego, the blasting of one's hope.
What would a robot know about blasting of what? What?
Oh, you're catching on, aren't you? Well, this robot reads minds. It understands about mental torture. Can't you understand now that if you ask it a question, it will give you the very answer you most want to hear? Wouldn't any other answer hurt you? And wouldn't Herbie know that?
Good heavens.
He knows everything. He knows what went wrong when he was built, but he won't tell anyone. Because it would puncture your ego or Dr. Bogart's ego to have a machine tell you where the mistake was. He would rather pretend he's not able to tell you.
It's incredible. Let's talk to him. Herbie, listen to me.
Yes, sir.
I have pencil and paper here. I want to know where we made the error in your construction.
Well, tell him, Herbie. He wants to know.
He doesn't.
But I do.
Yes, but not from me. I cannot tell you, Dr. Lanning. You know I can't. You don't want me to. You and Dr. Bogart would much prefer to find the answer yourselves.
We want the answer.
But not from me.
We do want it from you.
What's the use of saying that when you don't mean it? Don't you suppose I can't read below the superficial skin of your mind? Don't you suppose I can't read the subconscious mind, too? Deep down, you don't want the answer from me. I'm just a machine, given the imitations of life only by virtue of the positronic interplay of my brain, a brain that is man's device. You can't lose faith without being hurt. I can't hurt you. I can't give you the answer.
And still, I insist you answer.
I can't.
Herbie, Dr. Lanning wants to know the answer.
No, only by his own effort.
Herbie, neither Dr. Lanning nor Dr. Bogart may ever find the answer. And Dr. Lanning must know. You must tell him.
I can't. I can't.
But if you don't, you'll hurt him. You can see that, can't you?
Yes.
And still, if you do tell him, you'll hurt him too.
Yes. Yes.
But you can't tell him, can you?
No.
Yet if you don't, you hurt him, and you mustn't hurt. So you must tell him. But if you do, you hurt him, and you mustn't hurt. Herbie, what are you going to do? If you tell him the answer, you'll hurt him. And if you don't tell him, you'll hurt him, and you mustn't hurt. So you must tell him. But if you do, you hurt him. So you can't tell him. And if you don't, you hurt him. So you must
tell him. Stop it. Close your mind. It's full of pain and frustration and hate. I tried to help you. I told you what you wanted to hear. I had to.
Be quiet. Never mind what you told me. We're talking about something else now. Tell Dr. Lanning what he wants to know.
No.
No. How can you? Because if you do, you'll hurt him. Yet if you don't, you'll hurt him just the same. So you must. You must tell him. But if you do, you'll hurt him. Dead. He's only insane.
You did it.
Yes, I confronted him with the insoluble dilemma and he broke down. Well, you can scrap him now. He'll never speak again.
You did it on purpose. Why? What did he do to you?
What he did to me, Dr. Lanning, is my business. Oh, believe me, Doctor. It's only my business, not yours. And after all, you have so many other things on your mind now. Your marriage. I haven't had time to congratulate you.
No. Well, thank you, Dr. Calvin. Excuse me.
Herbie, you deserved it. You deserved to be destroyed. It was cruel what you did to me. It was cruel. Liar! Liar, that's what you were. Nothing but a liar!
John Campbell returns in just a moment.
Logical machine. You know, it hard to see in ourselves the things that are actually present. The truth hurts. It always has and probably always will. But Herbie, in many respects, is a child. You know, children are peculiarly logical. That's one of their great limitations. How many times has a child been in Herbie's position? A child between two warring parents, each demanding his loyalty.
Exploring Tomorrow on Tuned to Yesterday from February 26, 1958 from the Mutual Broadcasting System. You're listening to an hour of sci-fi on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now we move on to the Ray Bradbury story, The Wind, produced by the Radio City Playhouse. With Lyle Sudrow, Bryna Rayburn, and James Monks, this episode marks number 59 for the NBC series, first heard on October 30th, 1949.
Transcribed.
Radio City, showplace of the nation, the National Broadcasting Company presents Radio City Playhouse, Attraction 58. Gentlemen, here is the director of Radio City Playhouse, Harry W. Junkin.
Thank you, Fred. This afternoon, Radio City Playhouse is honored to present a story by Ray Bradbury. In our opinion, one of the most talented fiction writers on the American literary scene today. We welcome him to Radio City Playhouse, and we hope to present more of his brilliant work in the very near future. Our cast this week is small, but very much all-star. The leading roles of Herb Thompson and his wife, Jane, are played by Lyle Sudrow and Bryna Rayburn. Mr. Sudrow is heard on many leading network shows and is one of radio's most sought-after performers. Bryna Rayburn has appeared on Radio City Playhouse in many diversified roles, ranging from old women of 90 to Spanish girls of 16. In our opinion, her versatility is unequaled by any actress in the business. Here, then, is our show. Lyle Sudrow as Herb, Bryna Rayburn as Jane, and James Monks as Alan, in Attraction 58 on Radio City Playhouse, Ray Bradbury's The Wind.
Jane's getting dinner. Why?
Oh.
What's the matter, Alan?
I wanted you to come over.
We're having to start it over for bridge tonight. I'm sorry.
I wanted you to spend the night. When's your wife going away?
That's next week. She'll be in Ohio for about 10 days. Her mother's sick. I'll come over then.
Sure wish you could come over tonight.
I'd like to, Alan, but the starters are coming. Jane, take a fit.
I wish you could come over.
Yep. Is it the wind, Alan?
Oh, no.
Is it the wind?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the wind.
Yeah. Alan, it's a clear night. There's no wind.
There's some. It comes in the windows and blows the curtains a little. Just enough to tell me.
Look, Alan, why don't you jump in the car and drive over here? You can stay all night with us if you like.
Oh, no. It's too late for that.
Herb, dinner's on the table.
All right, honey. What about it, Alan?
No, it's too late for that. It might catch me on the way over. It's a long way. Thanks just the same.
Oh, it's only 30 miles. You could drive it in an hour.
Thanks, anyway.
Alan, I've got to go. Jane's got dinner on the table. You take a sleeping tablet or something. Get another chapter done on your book. You'll be all right.
The wind's coming tonight, Herb. It's coming for me tonight.
Herb, your dinner's getting cold.
All right, dear.
Look.
Alan, pull yourself together. You'll be all right. I've got to go now. Jane's got dinner ready.
I saw one of the clouds rip apart. It's coming for me tonight, Herb.
Look, Alan, I really have to say goodbye now. Call me back later if you like, okay? Alan?
It's not too much trouble?
It's no trouble at all. Call me anytime.
Herb Thompson had a kind face. A big, kind, sunburned face. Jane said people imposed on him, and perhaps they did. At any rate, he had a great many friends, a great many good friends. He was, amongst other things, a farmer. A young farmer with a war record and a degree in agriculture, which paid off in a good farm, a good house, and a good car. On that evening, that memorable evening, the phone rang four times during dinner. They didn't answer it. Herb and Jane sat there frozen and let it ring. When Alan phoned for the fifth time, Jane's nerves snapped.
Oh, not again.
What'll I do?
Let it ring.
Oh, but honey, five times. This is the fifth time.
Let it ring.
But if he's in trouble.
He isn't in trouble.
But he thinks he's in trouble. Jane, sometimes that's worse.
He's just got to learn, that's all.
Oh, I...
Why doesn't he stop it? It's enough to drive us crazy, too.
Jane, Alan's my best friend.
Oh, this thing is starting to... I just can't stand it. I can't stand it anymore. Stop it.
Jane, he's not well.
It's enough to drive anybody right out of their mind. Five times in half an hour. What's he trying to do, torture us? I just can't stand anymore.
Oh, honey, don't get upset. He's all alone up there.
Look, I've been all alone here lots of times, and he's a lot better able to take care of himself than I am.
Oh, I feel like a heel.
Look, he's just got to learn, Herb. He's got to learn that he can't lean on you for the rest of his life.
But, Jane...
I don't mean to sound heartless. Heaven knows I'm fond of Alan, too, but he's just got to learn, that's all. He's either got to make an adjustment of some sort, or he's got to go somewhere and have treatment.
I know, you're perfectly right, but somehow the guy gets me. Jane, he's such a sweet guy. He's been all over the world and mixed with all kinds of people, and he's still as clean living as... I'm just so darn sorry for him.
I'm sorry, too, Herb, but a man who spent the last year running away from the wind is... Well, it gets a little tired.
I know it does.
We can't drive 30 miles to Alan Henderson's every time he gets one of his attacks.
I know we can't.
Would you like some more coffee?
All right. Thanks.
If it's cold, I'll warm it up.
No, it's fine.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
All right, I'll answer. Hello, Alan.
Herb, I've been calling and calling half a dozen times.
I know.
Jane wouldn't let you answer, is that it?
Yeah.
Herb, I wish you'd come out. The wind's going to get me tonight.
Look, Alan, let me call you back. Now, don't call me back. I'll call you. We had people coming in tonight, but I'll see if Jane would mind.
I certainly would mind. The whole thing's absolutely ridiculous. Him and his winds that blow up and winds that blow down.
I know, Jane, but he's got such an imagination, you know, writing and everything.
I have absolutely no sympathy for a man who continually runs into windstorms and hurricanes and then gets a persecution complex about it.
You've got to admit that was some experience he had in the Himalayas during the war.
Lots of people had bad experiences during the war. You don't believe what he said about that valley, do you?
Well, it makes a good story.
You do believe it. You want to go out there, don't you? You want to go out and get into the car and drive 30 miles because Alan Henderson thinks the wind is after him.
Jane, he's my best friend.
He crashed in the Himalayas, and just because it was raining and hailing and blowing all at the same time...
He was nearly killed.
But the wind didn't have anything to do with it.
Well, just the same, he's been through a lot. That storm in Bombay, the hurricane in the South Pacific only 2 months later.
He should go to a psychiatrist.
Oh.
You've been out there 5 nights in the last 2 weeks to sleep with him. If he doesn't like to stay alone in that big old house, why doesn't he get himself a servant? He can afford it.
Oh, now, Jane, wait a minute. We've been friends ever since we were kids. I do wish you'd be a little more sympathetic.
How can I be sympathetic with a man who thinks the wind is mad at him? Now, I ask you. Sympathy is all very well, but When you have to go and spend 5 nights with a man because the wind's mad at him, I think it's about time he saw something.
I know, you're right.
Oh, honestly. Wait a minute, sir. Hello?
Jane, it's Herb there, please.
He's busy, Alan. What is it?
I stood in the open door and waited for it. I saw it coming down the highway, shaking all the trees one by one, until it shook the trees just outside the house.
Oh.
And it dived down toward the door, and then I slammed the door in its face. Hello? Hello?
He's crazy. He's absolutely crazy. Give you the shivers. There isn't a speck of wind here, and he says it's... Look, you can see there isn't even a breath of wind here.
Honey, he's 30 miles away.
There couldn't possibly be a serious storm at Allen's, not when it's like this here.
What'd he say?
He watched it come down the road, and he slammed the door in its face. The thing's starting to give me the creeps.
Jane, I think I'd better go out. I can be back in a couple of hours.
No.
But he's not well. He's not well at
all. Then let him get a doctor.
I can't just sit here all evening when he's suffering. The Stoddards can come another night.
Now, look here, Herb. We put the Stoddards off twice. Eileen Stoddard's my best friend, and I'm just not going to tell them you've gone out to Allen's again tonight. You did that twice before. She'll think...
I don't care what she thinks.
But don't you think I'm entitled to a little consideration? I've never complained before, but... 5 nights and 2 weeks is just a bit too thick.
Well, there's no need to shout about it.
Well, what do you expect me to do when you run around the countryside playing wet nurse to a nut?
Jane.
Well, he is. He's crazy. Oh, no.
No, he can't help it, Jane.
If you answer that phone, I'll... Let it ring. Honestly, it's enough to drive a person crazy. Will you stop it? Will you just stop phoning and shut up? Will you just go to bed and leave us alone?
Jane!
Will you just...
Jane! Hello? What's the matter with you?
Oh, Eileen, I'm sorry.
But are you all right?
Yes. I'm all right. We're having another siege of Alan Henderson, and I...
Oh.
Well, I thought it was him. He's phoned 7 or 8 times in the last half hour. I'm getting good and mad.
What's the matter with him?
I'll tell you when you get here. You are coming, aren't you?
Yeah, well, down here it looks like a storm coming up, and we thought we'd come early just in case, just so we wouldn't get caught halfway between our place and yours in the clouds.
Would you say it? Oh, yes, Eileen. You'll come any time. Earlier the better.
Well, Scotty says it may blow over, but I thought you wouldn't mind if we came early.
Oh, that'll be fine, Eileen. Bye. Come on, Herb. Help me with the dishes. Eileen and Stoddy are coming early.
What'd she say when you said that'll be fine?
Oh, just that they wanted to come early.
She say anything about the weather around their place?
Well, why should she? They're only 5 miles away. The weather there is just the same as it is here.
Jane. All right, let's get the dishes done. O'clock. I thought they were coming early.
They'll probably be here any minute.
Well, if they phone to say they're coming early, why don't they come early?
Well, Eileen has to put the kids to bed.
Yeah.
Susan's getting teased. Herb.
Yeah?
I didn't mean to be so sharp about Alan.
Oh, that's all right.
I just feel so strongly that if you give in to him anymore, it would be a mistake.
Forget it.
You can humor Alan's type of mind only so far, then being kind is the very worst thing you could do.
I'm not going, so let's skip it.
I just wanted you to know I'm sorry.
All right. Now I know.
Oh, that's probably Eileen to say they're just leaving.
Well, if they haven't left yet, they won't be here for half an hour. We'll answer it.
All right. Hello?
Jane, let me talk to Herb. Quickly, please.
Herb.
Yeah?
For you.
Alan?
Alan.
Hello?
Herb, this is the night, all right. It's all around the house, just waiting for me. It isn't blowing very much yet, but it will. I've got everything all locked up tight, but somehow a little bit of it got inside and started flipping the pages of my book.
What?
introduction? This book is dedicated to those who lost their fight with the elements and is written by one who has seen but who has always escaped. The winds reading the book heard, turning the pages one by one.
Yeah, well, I'm glad to hear you're feeling better.
I'm not better. Oh, what's the matter? Is Jane listening?
Yes.
Look, Herb, it's all around the house now. Like a great big vacuum cleaner that hasn't been turned on. In a minute, it'll start sucking.
What?
Sucking at the house and at the trees. Drawing everything up into its insides.
There's no wind here, Alan.
Of course there isn't. It's me it wants, not you. I've had all the windows reinforced. I've been getting ready for it for weeks now. Well, you know that. I've got all the lights turned on, too. I don't think it likes light. Do you?
Alan, why don't you come over here?
If I so much as stuck my nose outside the door, I'd be a goner. I've got to go now, Herb. I think it's going to start.
Yeah, well, call me back if you get too upset.
All right, Herb. I got to go now.
Yeah, hello. Alan?
Herb.
He hung up. He says the wind's reading his book. Turning the pages one by one. Getting ready to suck him up into its insides.
Herb, don't you see that...
I'm going out there, Jane. I'm sorry.
Herb, be reasonable. There's not a breath of wind here. Now, I ask you, let's be reasonable. Do you really think Alan could be in any physical danger when he lives in a great big stone house less than 30 miles away?
I think he's suffering, that's all. I know it's mental, but he's suffering.
It would take a cyclone to actually injure somebody in a house as solid as Alan's. Isn't that logical?
It isn't a question of logic.
But you can't go rushing out there every time he feels depressed or thinks the wind's mad at him or something. I think it's a trick. He's lonely.
He didn't sound lonely on the phone, Jane. He sounded sick, frightened and sick.
Was he sober?
You know he's never taken a drink in his life.
Do you think this is the way to help him, giving in to him all the time?
Well, Jane...
You think this will cure him? If you drop everything and run every time he asks you to, he'll get worse and worse. He's just got to learn that it's all mental. He's got to stand on his own two feet and be a man about
it. It's
not easy. Lots of people have troubles. I have troubles. We all have troubles. The only way we get strong enough to solve problems is to face them.
Okay, Jane, I won't go. But let's not talk about it anymore. Oh, I wonder what's keeping the Stoddards.
What on earth's keeping them? It's 9:30. Arlene said they were coming early.
Yeah. I'm having a drink.
Shall I phone again?
You just phoned a minute ago. Mary Jane said they'd left.
They must have had a flight or something, or else...
Or else what?
Nothing.
Or else what? What were you going to say?
Maybe they stopped somewhere, dropped in on somebody.
Oh. You want a drink?
No. Of course, if you intend to get tight...
Oh, since when does one drink constitute getting tight?
That isn't a drink, that's a tidal wave.
Well, I need it.
Well, there's nothing we can do but wait.
I could have gone out to Alan's.
Can't we please stop talking about Alan?
All right. All right. Let's talk about life, Let's talk about the billion other people on Earth who live their lives and are lonely. Even married people are lonely, you know, Jane. Sometimes when you're in a person's arms, you feel a million miles away from them.
Thank you very much.
I didn't mean it like that. I meant that we live our lives and other people live entirely different ones.
That's a profound statement.
We don't even think about how other people live or think or die. We just wait till death comes to us. What I really mean is that... You and I are sitting here on our self-assured butt bones waiting for the Stoddards while 30 miles away in a big old house completely alone and surrounded by night and God knows what, one of the finest guys that ever lived.
Herb!
Well, he is.
He's being tortured. He's suffering. I know he's suffering, Jane. I can feel that he's suffering. I'm going out there.
You can't. I won't let you.
The starter delayed. It'll serve him right.
If you go out there tonight, I'll leave you.
You'll what?
I will. He's been at this sort of thing for a year. Phone you up. Come over, he says. Every time he gets a sliver in his toe or a scratch on his wrist, he phones.
Well, why shouldn't he phone? I'm his friend.
Always it's the wind that gave him a push and made him stub his toe on the dock. The wind blew a nail into his wrist. He never tells the truth.
Jane.
He never says he was stupid and clumsy and that he tripped on the dock and got a sliver in his toe. He never says he scraped his wrist on a nail because he's a lousy carpenter and that every time he gets up on the roof to nail down a shingle, he falls.
Jane.
Always it's the wind that blew him off.
Will you what nurse to ask?
Get the credit.
Jane.
Will you have
stop it, Jane. Stop it.
He's crazy. You know he's crazy. I'm telling you, if you go out there tonight, I'm finished. I just can't stand any more of Alan Henderson and being chased by the wind.
That's the starters. All right, I'll answer the door. You better get calmed down and forget what you said. We'll both forget it.
Through cigar smoke and more drinks, Herb Thompson saw the cards swim in front of his eyes. He played bridge mechanically. His mind was with Alan. The phone rang several times, but he didn't answer it because Jane looked at him and he remembered what she said. Once he cocked his head and listened for the wind, but he didn't hear anything. When Jane looked at him, he straightened his head and discarded a jack of clubs. All he could think of was Alan, of their conversation 3 days ago when he sat on Alan's front steps and Alan told him about the wind.
Hear that, Herb?
Mm-hmm.
You know what that is?
Well, yeah. Just a breeze, Alan, that's all.
No, no. It's a big cloud of vapors. Winds from all over the world. It's part of the wind that ripped the Celebes a year ago and tore up the coast of Africa this spring. It's part of all those storms I escaped. It's followed me from India, from the Himalayas, because it doesn't want any living human being to know what I know about it. It hates me. It hates me because I've written books about it, telling how to defeat it.
Well, yeah, sure, Alan, I know.
You don't believe me, do you?
Well, sure, I believe you.
It's got 10,000 voices, Herb. The voices of people killed in typhoons, hurricanes, cyclones. It's a lot of spirits, a lot of dead people.
Look, Alan, what about a swim? Why don't we have a swim, and then you drive back with me, have dinner, and stay all
night?
No,
I don't want to swim because I don't want the wind to see me undressed.
You do. Alan, don't you think you ought to go into Los Angeles and have a doctor?
The wind's a lot of dead people. It killed them and took their intellects and their spirits to give itself intelligence. All the millions and millions of people killed in past centuries, twisted and tortured and taken from continent to continent, in the bellies of monsoons and whirlwinds.
Alan, please stop it. Stop thinking about the wind.
It gets more intelligent each day, takes more people's brains. It's taking mine, Herb. Any day now it'll take me.
Oh, Alan, come on back for dinner. Wouldn't you like that?
Any day now it'll take me. Wind's gonna get me, Herb. It's gonna get me.
Number three.
237, room 4, please.
Just a moment, sir.
Hello, Alan. Is everything all right?
Herb.
Jane made me take the receiver off the hook. We were playing bridge. I was dummy. I thought I'd see how you were.
I've been calling and calling you.
Yeah, I know. What's that I hear?
That's the wind.
You all right?
The front wall of the house just blew in.
What?
When the kitchen door gives, I'm heading for the cellar. I don't think it'll be long. Just a minute. Maybe only seconds.
Alan, what's that?
That was the kitchen door. I gotta go now. God bless you, Herb.
Yeah, Alan? Alan?
It was a charming evening.
I'm sorry, Jane.
First the phone rings 8 times in 20 minutes, then we take the receiver off the hook and you ignore everybody.
Jane.
Yes?
Jane, honey, we're not only in love, we're pretty good friends, too. Let's forget everything we've said today. Let's forget everything you've said. I phoned Alan when I was dummy. He sounded pretty bad. I'm going out there now.
All right, Herbert. If that's the way you feel.
I'll get him to a sanitarium tomorrow. Honey, I didn't know it was this bad.
Look, will you let me call him once?
But, Jane...
Will you let me talk to him rationally and firmly just once? Then if he's still upset, you can go.
All right.
Number please.
At 247, ring 4, please.
Just a moment.
He said it had blown in all the front of the house. I've never known him to be this bad before. I'll take him into Los Angeles in the morning, honey.
Hello, madam.
Oh, yes?
Were you ringing 247 ring 4?
That's right.
Is that Rockridge Farm?
Mr. Alan Henderson, yes.
At Rockridge Farm?
That's right.
I'm sorry, madam. The lines are down in that district. They've had some kind of freak hurricane. The lines are down from Rockridge to Melbourne.
What is it, Jane? What is it?
She said the lines were down. That they'd had some sort of freak hurricane.
Herb Thompson ran for the door and rushed out into the night. Halfway to the garage, a sudden wind caught and whipped his coat flaps, disheveled his hair. He knew suddenly that Alan was dead. He thought he heard voices, millions of voices, and among them, Alan. Then the wind began to die away. Morning in the high trees, passing away, going back out to the sea, to the Celebes, to the Ivory Coast, to Sumatra, to Cape Horn, to Cornwall, the Philippines, fading, fading. You have just heard The Wind, Attraction 58 on Radio City Playhouse. Lyle Sudrow was Herb, Bryna Rayburn was Jane, James Monks was Alan, Connie Lemke was Eileen. The music was composed and conducted by Dr. Roy Shield. The Wind is a short story by Ray Bradbury and was adapted for radio by Harry W. Junkin, who also directed the entire production.
This is Harry Junkin again. Next week on Radio City Playhouse, a down-to-earth story about a man and woman who never completely understood each other. Malice Domestic. Next week, Attraction 59 on Radio City Playhouse. Good afternoon, everybody.
Of some of the programs to be heard on NBC and KFI tomorrow. The Railroad Hour at 8:30 tomorrow evening. Light Up Time with Frank Sinatra and Dorothy Kirsten at 8. The Telephone Hour presents the world's great music at 9. And for diversified entertainment, it's Ethel Merman, tomorrow night at 7:30. You're tuned for the stars on NBC.
The Radio City Playhouse, on Tuned to Yesterday, adapting Ray Bradbury's story, The Wind, heard on October 30th, 1949 on NBC. And that closes this hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVillier. Thanks for listening.